is any building, railroad car, house trailer, houseboat, or other structure is a dwelling house within the meanings of, well, these are the arson statutes. If any part of it has usually been occupied by any person lodging therein. Now,
but that's not the definition of dwelling house that applies for a burglary statute.
No.
Here, go ahead.
Well, all I was going to suggest was that in the Michigan statute, they define dwelling as follows. Dwelling means a building which is used or usually used for lodging, period.
I wonder if the problem arises by putting this other than the actor in the definition. A dwelling house is still a dwelling house, whether it's that of the actor or whether it isn't. But the crime would be in entering a dwelling house of somebody else.
Sure.
But we've got it here in the definitions, haven't we?
Well, I don't think we need other than the actor.
Well, no, and rather than see us get hung up on it, because all I was trying to do was say what I think that the law says anyway, but to make it, to express it, that we're not talking about an individual entering his own home with an intent to commit a crime.
Now, but I fail to see why we have to complicate this by the use of the word at night and the last clause in the sentence, whether or not a person's actually present.
Well, of course, you've got to apply these definitions to the provisions of burglary that are set forth later on here. And
burglary at night has traditionally been more serious than burglary in the daytime.
In other words,
all right, this is true, but we so provide for that in our degrees of burglary, don't we? Because we say in burglary in the first degree, on page 9, sub 2, a person commits burglary in the first degree if the building is a dwelling and the entering or remaining occurs at night. Now, we talked over here in the definition about lodging therein at night, and this is in the conjunctive, and we're saying entering or remaining occurred at night. And what I'm saying is this is redundant. Follow me? Alright. We define dwelling, and we say that it's a building occupied by a person for lodging therein at night.
Usually, yeah.
Alright. Now, we say burglary in the first degree occurs if the building is a dwelling and the entering or remaining occurs at night.
And the reason that's more serious because the entering or remaining at night is a dwelling, and dwelling means that that's a building where there's usually a person there at night. But I think those two things have to be read together.
Maybe I'm wrong on that, as I looked at it, but I did make a note in my book, and that you don't make any distinction here for a daytime house burglary.
Any distinction?
Well, you don't make any provision for a daytime house burglary. Well, I guess maybe you do. The building is a dwelling. No, you don't, because this is conjunctive. It has to be a dwelling and it has to occur at night. But I say that now in Portland, probably 75% of house burglaries are daytime burglaries, where people go in there and take out TV sets and stereos and stuff. And
I can easier, more easily find out whether somebody's at home before they do it.
Mm-hmm. And the reason that the police say that burglary in a dwelling is, should be a more serious crime is because of the not only the trespass to the person's private possessions, but also the fear that it instills in the woman, particularly, that if this guy might come back, you see.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, and that's why there's also the danger of violence to people in the building.
Is there
the whole thing?
Is there a provision here for burglary in the daytime?
Burglary in the daytime would fall under burglary in the second degree. Commits burglary in the second degree if he enters or remains unlawfully in a building with intent to commit a crime therein.
At any time.
Right.
Day or night.
It's aggravated and becomes burglary in the first degree if he does that
at
either at night and it is a dwelling and the quarry and any of these other things aren't those exposed to under the left.
Well, I was.
Well, let's see, what about burglary not in the dwelling then?
Burglary not in the dwelling would be burglary in the second degree.
Accepting that building is what includes.
Yeah.
It is not limited to.
What is it? And of course, our present statutes, burglary not in the dwelling isn't as serious as.
No, it isn't. No, I just wondered how it was covered, but I see how it's covered now. The building.
I don't see where it says dwelling in either one of those. In either section, in first or second degree.
Well, under first degree, it's first degree. One of under subsection 2 of burglary on first degree.
What page?
Page 9.
When you just say building, you can't go in.
No, the building is a dwelling.
Building? Oh.
And the entering or remaining.
Oh, I see. Dwelling. Building also means. Or dwelling also means. Yeah, I see.
In other words, what I've attempted to do there is retain the traditional what originally was thought of as burglary, and that's burglary in a dwelling in the nighttime, you know, breaking and entering the dwelling house of another in the nighttime, and retaining that and making that burglary in the first degree because of the terror that causes the inhabitants of their dwelling house, the likelihood of someone being hurt during the nighttime.
But the point is, present Oregon burglary in a dwelling statute does require that breaking and entering occur at night in order to make burglary in a dwelling. And your draft does, so in that sense, there's a deviation from the present statute. But I'm sorry that I got the cart before the horse, really, because I think if you agree, we probably better get back here to the definitions.
Now, and I think some of these definitions maybe will make more sense to you as we get into the drafts to see how they how they're used and also how they compare with some of these other provisions of the Model Penal Code.
Do we agree that building is defined in sub 1 is okay? Okay, if there's no objection to that.
Now premises, of course, that's going to be used in the trespass section.
Yeah.
All right, and do we agree that that's okay? I think that's
yeah.
Now, dwelling.
Yeah, I raise a question on that premises, and this is something that prevails throughout this whole section so far is that, for instance, you say premises includes dwelling means. Now, I don't know. I intended to spend some time looking it up and see if there is any distinctional law in this kind of defining, whether there is a difference. And I think the court, in looking at this, would have to assume that the drafters of this code meant that there must be some difference where you say premises includes, but the next one you say dwelling means. There must be some difference between means and includes.
Well, you know, you raised a good point, because we've been doing this. We've been using the term includes generally, where we couple it with includes, but it's not limited to. And otherwise, we've been using means, I think.
Why wouldn't we be saying everything we mean if we could say premises means real property?
I don't know that it's a question you can solve right now, but I just raised it for consideration of a...
Well, what I was saying, you see, I was saying that premises, as it's used later in the trespass article, that premises does not just mean real property,
right?
That it includes building, as we've defined building. So when we're talking about premises and for trespass purposes, that we're not just talking about trespass to real property.
Yeah, in other words, premises would be aircraft, and it's also land.
And that's why I didn't use the term "not limited to" there.
I don't think it should be.
What I was trying to do to show that we're just not talking about real property when we talk about trespass to premises.
But should you say there in sub 1 of building that building means?
Means any vehicle, boat, aircraft, or other structure that for overnight accommodation.
Well, no, I don't think so. Because we have the expression in addition to its
ordinary meaning.
Yeah.
But now,
we could say also means, if instead of includes, we could say.
I think also means a little more expressive.
I think it's okay the way it is.
Of course, the same reasoning I had for two, that certainly doesn't apply to one when I used includes up there.
I noticed the New York code does the same thing.
Yeah.
So does Michigan. Okay, go ahead. Now the dwelling.
Okay, dwelling. And I'm certainly not going to argue very strongly about that phrase other than the actor, because but dwelling means a building which is usually occupied by a person other than the actor, lodging there in the night, whether or not a person is actually present.
Let's delete the other than the actor. Any objection?
No.
Night means the period between 30 minutes after sunset and 30 minutes before sunrise. Now this is, I think this is a good definition of night.
Sunset to sunrise, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's what our present statute says. It says nighttime includes, but it's not limited to, no, it doesn't say that. It says nighttime includes the period between sunset and sunrise.
No, it's 30 minutes earlier.
And if you'll notice under my commentary there, Model Penal Code says that considerations which are significant in this connection are that darkness facilitates commission of the offense, increases the alarm of the victims, and hampers identification of suspects. Such darkness does not occur at sunset, but at some time during the ensuing hour. Our selection of an interval of 30 minutes has support in some current legislation, including safety regulations under the Motor Vehicle Codes and the Federal Aviation Act. And our statute, ORS 483402, requires vehicle lights to be turned on during this period. This same definition.
Or any other time when the atmosphere is so obstructed that it's unsafe to drive.
But as far as turning on your lights at night, that's what it means. It means 30 minutes after sunset and 30 minutes before sunrise.
Mm-hmm. And you want to put in standard in daylight?
But it seems to me that that's a more accurate definition of night than between sunset and sunrise, because it isn't dark at sunset. And it's light before sunrise.
Yeah, but
commit some other crime. developed, and of course originally I think it was to commit some other crime in the dwelling house of a person in the nighttime, and that crime namely being to steal something. But as the statutes have grown through the years, apparently in most of the states, you get into the breaking and entering type of statutes, and such as ours, where we have a burglary to break and enter with intent to commit a crime, but we also have it a crime to any person who has, having committed or attempted to commit a crime in the dwelling house of another in the nighttime, breaks any outer door, window, shutter, is also, it's called burglary under our statute now. It's guilty of burglary, but the punishment's only 3 years.
Is it considered to be breaking and entering when you use some device to turn the lock or manipulate
it? No, it's breaking any unlawful entry, even if the door's unlocked.
Presently?
The entry can be the...
Breaking and entering is necessary material right now.
Well, and the reason for that was that under common law burglary that you had to have a break. In other words, and you got into these strange situations where if the door was open and you went in, there wasn't any break. So it wasn't burglary, but if you had to break the door, or if you could crawl through an open window, it wasn't breaking.
Yeah.
But if you had to open the window to crawl in, it was a break. And so we have statutes like ORS 164220 that says every unlawful entry of a dwelling house with intent to commit a crime therein is a breaking and entering of the dwelling house within the meaning of 164230.
I wonder how should I try it. Well, how do you make the distinction between burglary and just ordinary trespass? Where are we going to get to?
Would be, the intent to commit a crime. Either the intent to commit a crime at the time of the entering, or the intent to commit a crime at the time of the unlawful remaining on the premises.
You just enter with the intent to use the telephone or use the bathroom. Will it be trespass under the other statute?
Yeah.
If you're going.
Of course, such an entry wouldn't be burglary under our present statutes either.
I know. In fact, under our present statute, isn't it?
Are these words remains unlawfully in the second degree? Is that a new concept? 6. Remains unlawfully in the building with intent to commit a crime.
It's a new concept to the extent of the language remains unlawfully.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, it is. And but if you compare it. With New York, a person is guilty of burglary when he enters or remains unlawfully with intent to commit a crime.
That's all. He's not licensed or privileged to do so.
You know, I don't want to jump back, so I'll wait for you to finish your observation regarding that question, and I have a point that I think you should think of.
Well, if you stop to think about it, too, under our present statutes, when a person is prosecuted for burglary, the best evidence that the prosecution is going to have about the intent that that individual had when he enters is what he did after he got in there. In other words, if he just breaks in there and doesn't commit any crime inside, doesn't steal anything or commit any other offense, you're certainly not going to have a burglary case that would be as good as one where he's stolen some property. And the evidence that you're going to have to go to prove that he had an intent to commit a crime when he broke in under our present statutes is the fact that he stole some property after he got in there. And so we're really not changing things as much as it might appear on the surface. The individual who is prosecuted or would be prosecuted under this statute for burglary, where it was burglary committed by remaining unlawfully, is the one who has committed a crime in there.
Under the present statute.
Well, under this one.
No, under the present statute, it says any person who having committed or attempted to commit a crime in a dwelling house of another breaks out as guilty of burglary.
Yeah, when he breaks out.
Yeah, all right. But if this is qualified by saying that this person, in order to be guilty of this, has to have committed or attempted to commit a crime in his dwelling house. Here, we don't qualify this by saying that he has to have committed or attempted to commit a crime. And we don't limit the dwelling house. I'm not saying that it's wrong, but I'm saying that it's not exactly right to say that this is parallel to the present statute.
No, I didn't say it was parallel. I said it doesn't change it too much because my language there is with intent to commit a crime there. Now,
well, if somebody goes to a party, gets drunk, goes to sleep, wakes up, and everybody else is gone, and he's there unlawfully, he's not privileged or licensed to be there, it's not open to the public, he hasn't committed any crime unless he suddenly decides, well, I'll make off with these paintings or something.
Or I'll go down and get myself a drink of booze out of the guy's refrigerator.
That would be a statuous act.
Yeah, but it would make burglary out of what otherwise would be a very minor.
That can be taken into consideration in the sentencing.
Yeah, but you don't help to work with the prosecutor if you get a situation where somebody that's mad in hell, somebody else can come in and demand a serious prosecution.
But I don't think you're hurting the prosecutor any by enabling him to prosecute a man who has committed a crime under a statute that says that you don't need to have an unlawful entry if you have an unlawful remaining.
That's right.
I'd be very surprised to see too many district attorneys object to that kind of language.
Yeah, I think that's right. In other words, you're remaining takes the place of unlawful entry.
And I'm saying this, that no defendant's going to be heard under this language unless he has in fact committed a crime in those premises.
The only thing that bothered me just a little bit is in thinking about the concept of burglary means breaking in. Traditionally, at least in my thing, it doesn't include a guy that's lawfully inside the building already.
Of course, we're away from the common law. The present Oregon burglary statutes are a departure from the common law definition. And these other model codes that we're following have completely departed, and we're just going in the same direction. I know that this is the same as New York, it's the same as Connecticut.
But I think one of the favorite MOs of burglars now is to somehow gain entry lawfully, hang around, hide in the closet somewhere,
particularly true as far as department stores.
Yeah, large weddings.
Sure,
it's
a problem.
The bride's parents don't know who the devil the groom's parents invited.
And there they go with the wedding guests.
Under the New York penal law, their commentary states, the true essence of criminal trespass or burglary should be intrusion into premises without license or privilege. When a person enters a building at a time and in an outward manner which is authorized, but with intent to commit a crime therein, there is a conflict of authority as to whether he is guilty of burglary. A literal interpretation of the usual burglary statute can justify such result. The question can arise in a variety of ways. The dishonest employee entering his place of employment at the unusual hour. The corrupt municipal building inspector bent on extortion. A witness entering a courthouse with intent to commit perjury. And of course, Oregon, there's a case cited here for Justice Sloan's very in an early California case, a shoplifter entered a grocery store during business hours. The court held that a person who enters with the intention to commit a crime enters without invitation. He is not one of the public invited. The meaning is patent upon the face of the statute. No words are found in the statute qualifying the character, kind, time, or manner of the entry, save that such entry must be accompanied with a certain intent. And it would be judicial legislation for this court to interpolate other conditions into the section of the code. We're going to cite several other cases. The first sentence of subdivision 5, which is the same as R5, prescribes that a person who enters or remains unlawfully enter upon premises when he is not licensed or privileged to do so. This provision is referable to employees who enter their place of employment, invited guests, and all other persons who have an express or implied license or privilege to enter or remain in or upon premises. And really, this isn't saying anything that that the Oregon court hasn't said, is it really?
My knowledge.
I mean, this isn't a departure from Oregon case law.
For remaining unlawfully with an
intent. As a matter of fact, the way this section is drafted does not go as far as, let me find this the case, does not go as far as the Oregon court did. Justice Sloan, what was the case out of Pendleton? Case involving the telephone booths.
I can't say the name of it.
Is it Keys?
Yeah, State versus Keys.
Well, that's whether it was a building or not, wasn't it? I'm not opposed to that remaining unlawfully concept. I just mentioning it's something different.
If there's no objection to it remaining, let me suggest that we move on then to page 6, burglary in the second degree.
Okay, a person commits burglary in the second degree if he enters or remains unlawfully in a building with intent to commit a crime therein. And of course, building as defined in sub 1 of our first section. The basic definition of burglary in the lowest degree of the crime is dealt with for this section. It amounts to nothing more than a form of criminal trespass with two aggravating factors. One, the premises invaded constitute a building. And two, the intruder enters or remains with intent to commit a crime therein. This section corresponds to New York Revised Penal Law 140.20, which they call burglary in the third degree.
Why don't you use after if, say knowingly? Or I mean, Yeah, I mean, after he... A person commits burglary in the second degree if he knowingly enters or remains unlawfully in the building.
Yeah, that's kind of
You know, all these codes are so close. This is what you have here is identical to Connecticut and identical to New York's. And with the inclusion of the word knowingly, it's identical to Michigan's. And I guess I'm worrying about dotting I's and crossing T's. I don't suppose that. I don't know whether it materially adds anything.
It couldn't change it, I don't think.
I don't think it does.
It would keep you from prosecuting if we eventually got into the wrong house.
Yeah, but you also have to have an intent.
Yeah.
An intent to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you... When you got an intent to commit a crime, I don't think you need them.
No, okay, let's go on to...
We can skip to... I don't know if you want to go through all this on the relationship to the existing law or not.
I don't...
Well, that does cover burglary, not dwelling, all that stuff.
Yeah. And then these next couple of pages are just our present wording of burglary statutes. And now on page 8, I note that you noted that the draft section would overlap 164... 220 through 164, 250. Burglary in the second degree would occur if the intruder entered or remained unlawfully with intent to commit a crime in 1, a dwelling in the daytime without any aggravating factors, or 2, a non-dwelling building in the daytime or nighttime without any aggravating factors. The more serious crime of burglary in the first degree is defined in the next section, differs only in terms of aggravating factors, such as explosives or a dangerous weapon or a dwelling house in the nighttime. So, 220 through 250 under chapter 164, 220 talks about a dwelling house.
I've got some trepidation about your definition of building because I'm not sure that it includes curtilage. And I think that's kind of a significant departure.
That's because it isn't either a building to accommodate persons overnight or for carrying on business. Is it? Premises.
Well.
Would include the curtilage, wouldn't it?
I think your objection's well taken.
I think it'd be absolutely futile for us to sit down between the five of us and try to figure out how you got to work that in. But you can have, under the existing Oregon case law, burglary in a dwelling if the crime or the breaking and entering involves a building, not a dwelling, which is in the curtilage of the dwelling house. I think any way you have this defined, Don, you can reduce that to BNID. And
yeah, I think you may be right, yeah.
Maybe that's all right, though.
Well, is it? If you're living out in the country and your wife is alone and this guy comes by in the stealth of the night, breaks into a building within the curtilage.
Yeah.
we want to proscribe that and make that a more serious offense, every bit as much as if, because she might still...
Every bit as much as what? First degree?
Yeah, right. So what are you striving to...
Somebody might walk out there and interrupt him in the act, because he might shoot in the eyes.
What are you striving to proscribe?
Well, isn't that privilege business, and that the old 240, isn't that what we call burglary, not the dwelling?
No.
Where is burglary, not the dwelling?
Well, wait a minute. 240 is not in the dwelling. Wait, did you hear that? Well, no. 6, 4, 1, 6, 4, 2, 40 is burglary not in the dwelling.
Yeah.
And that's a...
lesser crime than burglary in the dwelling.
Yeah.
That's the dwelling that occurred.
Yeah. I agree with... Well, I wouldn't want my wife to be scared like that, but I don't know that we ought to apply the burglary in the dwelling statute to somebody stealing chickens out of the chicken house.
Yeah, and under my draft here, this would amount to burglary in the second degree.
Actually, for you know this terror thing, a casual prowler is just as terrorizing as your burglary under these conditions.
Well, maybe I'm.
Well, what if because in the chicken house a building under your definition? Well, in addition to the ordinary meaning, yeah, the ordinary meaning it would be a building. Yeah, I think it is. And I think it is included in the second degree.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe I raised a red flag there.
Well, I looked at 1, 1, 6, 4, 2, 40 when you brought it up, and I saw that language about the curtilage, and I thought,
yeah,
that's where I might have overlooked that.
But it comes in because of the words in addition to its ordinary meaning, doesn't it?
Hey, chicken house comes in. And I was mistaken. Building within the curtilage of a dwelling house is BNID. So, you don't change it. Okay. We're on now at first.
Okay. Here be violence. The second degree business, isn't it?
Now, a couple other things maybe we ought to touch upon before we get this first degree, and that is that the basic definition of burglary, which is the second degree draft, requires no breaking and is consistent with ORS 164-220 about every unlawful entry is a breaking. It does away with the necessity of proving intent to commit a felony in the non-dwelling type of burglary presently required by ORS
164-240,
and makes the intent requirement the same as now required in the dwelling type of burglary under 164-230. That is, the intent to commit any crime. The basic definition also eliminates the requirement of proving the intruder had the intent at the time the interval of burglary was tested. Alright, burglary in the first degree, page 9. First commit burglary in the first degree if he violates section blank, which would be our second degree section. And if, in effecting entry or while in the building, or in immediate flight therefrom, he A, is armed with explosives or a deadly weapon, or B, intentionally or recklessly inflicts or attempts to inflict bodily injury on anyone, or 2, the building is a dwelling and the entering or remaining occurs at night. Summary of this incorporates the basic definition of burglary contained in the preceding section, but aggravates if the intruder is armed with explosives or a deadly weapon. Of course, deadly weapon is yet to be defined by the commission. Or injures or attempts to inflict bodily injury on anyone, or if the building is a dwelling, the offense occurs at night. Derivation, the language used in subsection 1, in effecting entry or while in the building or in immediate flight therefrom, he, is taken from the New York 140.25. The model penal code employs the phrase in the course of committing the offense and then goes on to define that as meaning one that occurs in an attempt to commit the offense or in flight after the attempt or commission. New York version seems more precise and eliminates the need for further definition. Paragraphs A and B are from the Model Penal Code, section 221.1, and subsection 2 is further language from the New York proposal. The complete section, with the aggravating factors stated in the alternative, closely resembles the New York definition of burglary in the second degree. Now,
reckless laying folks. I don't like the word recklessly. In view of the fact that you've got a situation where he might have been an invitee, in other words, lawfully in the premises, but he didn't leave when he was supposed to leave. And then he recklessly hurt somebody, even though he didn't intend to. Still, he's burglary. Is that going too far?
Well, I don't know if it's going too far or not. This is, that's from the penal code, model penal code.
They say purposely, knowingly, or recklessly. Infix or attempts to inflict. Purposely, knowingly, or recklessly.
I'll go for purposely and knowingly, but I don't know about recklessly.
Well, the fellow finds himself in building and then
Lawfully.
But then he remains unlawfully. And then he hears someone coming and runs by them in the course of breaking away from there. And he has to remain unlawfully, doesn't he, before this begins to apply.
He just refuses to believe what he's told.
No.
Yes.
No. Yes.
Before this can apply.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, he would have had to have
remained unlawfully.
Remains unlawfully means to enter or remain in upon the premises, in or upon premises when the premises at the time of the entry or remaining are not open to the public and the actor isn't otherwise licensed or privileged to do so. Now, he's remained unlawfully. They're not open and he isn't licensed or privileged to stay there. But that in and of itself doesn't constitute the crime of burglary unless he thereafter intends to commit a crime. And if he intends to commit that crime, then it's burglary in the second degree. And it's burglary in the first degree. If in addition to intend to commit that crime, he is armed with a weapon, or he recklessly inflicts or attempts to inflict injury on anyone. I think this is good because you have a situation where he's armed, maybe it's done in this sense, but I'm sure threatening it that way.
If I am in the closet just before closing time, say the place and the fellow leaves the closet and has a big stick in his hand and he hits the prior with a stick.
That's intentional, yeah.
What if he picks up a chair and says, recklessly says, get out of the way or I'll hit you with it. And in the act of recklessly doing that, he hits somebody behind him with it and inflicts injury on him. That's recklessly inflicting injury. He said, I didn't intend to do it. The DA could say, well, you did it recklessly.
Mark gets it, I got scared. He doesn't take reasonable care and runs out and hits somebody and he does it, knocks you down.
Of course, yeah.
No, the New York approach narrows it down a little bit. Because they say, his first degree, if he causes physical injury to any person who is not a participant in the crime. Yeah. That's what they're getting at.
Or, and they have an additional subsection,
yeah.
Or if he uses or threatens the immediate use of a dangerous instrument. Now, that's none of the sub A of the New York Bill. Because in the first instance, if you have the dangerous, well, I guess they're drawing a distinction between yeah. weapon and instrument.
Yeah, and deadly and dangerous, too.
I had a notation on mine on my draft on when I read over this as to why we shouldn't just adopt the New York language as A, B, and C.
What page?
13 in the draft.
Similar to what's in the model penal code, or, you know, there will certainly be a distinction, as there is under present law, between a deadly weapon and a dangerous weapon.
Well, there's not a statutory definition of deadly weapon in the present code, so.
There's certainly an abundance of case law on it, but I haven't, for the burglary, I didn't. Research the definitions.
So are the dangerous weapon. Any person who assaults or beats another with a cowhide, whip stick, or like thing, having at a time in his possession a pistol, dirk, or other deadly weapon, etc., etc., etc. There is an abundance of case law. That's right. There's a famous case where it was held that a beer bottle was a deadly weapon. And I think it should be left
that
up.
That was in Wayne County.
Was it? But I think maybe we ought to rest on the case law as far as those definitions are concerned.
Well, of course, I know. Well, I don't know. That's another. All of these, I think, most of the model codes try to define all of these things certainly as far as possible. But anyway,
there's another significant departure there, and then on page 13 in the New York Code, they say he or another participant in crime. Now. That's unnecessary if we're going to employ the principle continue to have the no distinction
principle. The beer bottle case was State versus Shannon.
Would have to be an Irish one, wouldn't it?
I like that B better in New York than this one.
I would be amenable to taking A, B, and C out of New York and putting it right in here. Actually, it would be B and C for New York and B and B here. And your attempt. Don, in your language, on page 9, 1B, that would be picked up by a general attempts to statute anyway.
Now, as another crime.
Well, intentionally or recklessly inflict or attempts to inflict.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, in New York, they don't use the language attempt. But we will have, if we follow current code, a general statute which would define the crime of attempt. Now, you know, it carries a penalty of one half the penalty of the perpetrated offense.
Here, this makes burglary out of if he attempts to do it for a different purpose than that general attempt.
Yeah, this is just to make it a more serious class of burglary.
That's right.
Use in New York after the word causes, and they say causes or attempts to cause physical injury to any person.
May that be covered by the uses or threatens the immediate use of a dangerous instrument?
It might. Well,
maybe
not. B would injury to a person without a dangerous instrument. That doesn't say it. Serious injury.
Causes or attempts to cause physical injury to any person without physical crime.
Yeah, if you want to include that attempt concept in it, that would be one way to do it. I'm not saying it should be.
Well, you got a strong arm situation where the night watchman comes around and the guy slug him.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't used a deadly weapon. I don't think the cases say that the use of the fist is
a dangerous weapon.
That's covered under the aggravated assault statute.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a situation, probably, where a more serious offense would be warranted, and it wouldn't be covered by the use of this terms here.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense.
Causes or attempt, would you agree with that? Causes or attempts? Would you say inflict or attempts to inflict rather than causes?
Page 13.
1B. We're going to transpose this to A, B, and C to the Oregon statute.
Oh.
But Oregon or Don's draft said intentionally or recklessly inflicts or attempts to inflict bodily injury to anyone. And I was going to suggest that we say rather than causes or attempts to cause. Inflicts or attempts to inflict physical injury to any.
Yeah, that implies more direct causation than by cause you can kick over a shelf if it hit somebody.
Right.
I think inflict is better.
Now
you're just gonna take A, B, C and put it down.
So you have inflicts or attempts to inflict physical injury. Any person is not participating in the crime.
It doesn't matter if he kills his partner. You know what? Is there anything to gain by eliminating injury to him or participating in the crime?
There have been cases. This arises under the murder statutes where people
shoot a fellow robber
is shot by a policeman or the store owner, and surviving robber is prosecuted for murder under the felony and murder.
Yeah, but that's a different concept.
That's a different thing. I think it's okay to leave it in here.
It's okay, but that doesn't mean
or we're implying that the actor, that the defendant.
I've got to go, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very, very much for coming.
I said loud enough to myself.
Thank you.
We appreciate it very much. We're implying here that the actor is partly responsible. For the injury. What do you think, Mr.
Well, they seem, New York seems to be saying that if you're a principal to this, to burglary, then you assume the risk of getting injured, I guess, is what they're saying.
Sure, yeah.
Let's take a 5-minute break and stretch, and then I guess we're going to be able to come back quick through this in about a half hour.
Is someone trying to perfect a petition now?
I think it's well to leave that.
All right. Well, that's what I was saying. They're sort of saying, well, it's okay if he's a participant in the crime if he gets hurt.
Yeah, and that makes the prosecutor prove that the guy that got hurt was not a participant.
Well, I didn't think of that. That's a good point. Is that what
you mean? If they had to have 10% of the signatures cast for governor in the last election, how many would it take?
In the last election, it would be 3
inflicts or attempts to inflict physical injury to any person, semicolon, or, and that we amend section 1 of burglary in the first degree of our preliminary draft 1 by inserting the amended section of the New York Penal Code that I just read, plus 1C of the New York Penal Code into our burglary in the first degree. Now, all in favor say aye. Do you follow me?
Yes. I'm ask one more question.
Okay.
It might be facetious, but is there any point in describing the explosives? Could be a firecracker. Dangerous explosives, or?
You have to say explosives because
nobody's
going to
prosecute anybody for
a firecracker. Well, of course, that's aimed at the safe cracker.
Yeah. Or a person who might be going into a public building with.
You know, as I mentioned in my commentary, the maximum, that's 40 years now. Our present statutes here.
Burglary.
Yeah, it's always been a very serious. 164-260. And they say nitroglycerin, dynamite, gunpowder, or other high explosives, they say.
Yeah, and that's the thing I was thinking about. It's the real serious explosives you're talking about. I wonder if they had to say so.
The 164-830, the statute that we talked about in the malicious destruction section, which related to explosives, and which you're going to work on, I think, says, sets off or explodes or attempts to set off or explode any bomb, dynamite, powder, or other explosive. But which one did you say?
164-260.
It's page 8. Yeah. Well, you get by itself.
Uses or attempts to use, make this one dynamite, gunpowder, or other high explosive. And here we've got disarmed with explosives.
Well, this is kind of an incongruous thing because is a nitroglycerin, dynamite, gunpowder, or other high explosive. A gunpowder is high explosive, but very small amount of it.
Because of the structure of the gun.
So if we say here it's armed with high explosives or a deadly weapon, I think we get in trouble.
How about the word dangerous explosives?
I think we get in trouble again.
I think it's all right the way it is.
Well, it certainly would cover the kind of conduct you're worried about. I mean, if you just call it explosives, you're certainly going to get to the safe crackers and the ones that use nitro. Of course, that isn't, I guess, too popular anymore. But
they just had
well, it isn't because of this present statute in the books.
Yeah, but I mean, we wouldn't be narrowing our statute with just
no.
the language explosives.
We'd be broadening.
In other words, the same protection is going to be there.
Oh, yeah. That's what I want.
Okay. Well, then, but... I'm
sorry. Go ahead. Have you placed your motion,
yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I should move to amend.
Okay. What's your...
Well, I really... Well, I want to move restore language under B.
Under B?
B of the New York law.
Uh-huh.
Which one?
Well, I have B of the New York law.
You've altered it, though.
Well, I've altered it by saying, right, rather than saying causes physical injury to anyone who is not a participant in the crime, I've altered it to read inflicts or attempts to inflict physical injury to any person.
Yeah. Inflicts. It's the same as causes.
No, not necessarily.
I think we ought to have causes. I really do, but I think we ought to leave that in there who is not a participant in a crime. Because I take the assumption that the person who is involved in a burglary, and this is truly a burglary statute, has really done something to... He has precipitated this himself. He isn't an innocent bystander in any way, and so anything that happens after he touches off this chain of circumstances is... I really don't have too much sympathy for him. My reason, Mr. Chairman, for moving to amend and restore the original language of B and accept the remainder of your motion is just that I really think we're going to run into some problems of passage if we don't.
Any discussion?
Well, I'd like to make just one, or maybe just ask a question on that. Do you think, though, that even though you might not have much sympathy for this individual who's a co-principal in this burglary, you don't have any sympathy with him, but because of that, should you let the guy off, his co-principal who also is involved in burglary, but who caused the injury to this other participant, should you let the other guy off any easier because the person that he injured happened to be a fellow participant in the crime? Are you really accomplishing what you want to accomplish? Because what you're saying is because you don't have much sympathy for the guy who got hurt, you're going to let his buddy off with a second degree burglary rap instead of first.
We're not trying to protect the injured burglar. We're trying to prevent both burglars from engaging in conduct that's dangerous. because while in this event, it just so happened that it was a co-defendant that got hurt, it very easily could have been an innocent bystander.
Well, I think we may be. That's why I brought up the question.
Well, are you also wanting to amend to bring back in the words who is not a participant to the crime?
Yeah.
Well, then, if you are, that's what you're doing.
You see? Because with that,
actually, I guess what I want to do is adopt the language we had over here under A and B and bring in C, because that's what I really want to do. Because I think there's a need for this
intentionally or
recklessly business. I really do.
Well,
when a fellow becomes involved in this, if it truly is a burglary, when a fellow becomes involved in this, this means what it says, and it says burglary up there. Then, doggone it, he's not entitled to do anything reckless, putting anything else. He's supposed to, he should have started this chain against the first place.
I think in order to simplify the record, I'm going to withdraw my motion for the time being. I'm going to withdraw the motion that I made.
Let me make another motion here just for trial run here. I move that we adopt subsection 1A and B as proposed, and that we add C, we add 1C of the New York law, uses or threatens to get a use of dangerous.
Any discussion of this?
I think that if you have a middle ground, if you use the word causes instead of the word inflicts, and leave it open whether the injury would be caused by accident or recklessness or intention. The implication is intentional. The jury would probably so go for that, but still make out a case by just showing there was injury to the person.
Talking about 1B in the program, you'd say that intentionally.
Well, I'm going back to New York City.
Oh.
B, used causes physical injury to any person.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of inflicts or attempts to inflict physical injury.
Yeah, okay.
I don't like to use the word recklessly, but I think that causes would encompass it.
Yes.
All right. Do you withdraw your motion, Representative Elder?
Yes.
Do you have a motion, Mr. Spalding?
Yes, I make the same motion as you did, accepting I would omit there from changing the word causes to inflict or attempts to inflict and have it read causes or attempts to cause physical injury to any person.
Yeah, okay.
All right, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Nobody's opposed? Everybody? Now, we have adopted subsection 1 of burglary in the first degree. We're now down to sub 2.
May I ask? You want B of the New York law in place of B on page 9, right?
Right.
And also C.
Right.
And then B of the New York law is amended.
Yes.
No.
New York is the same as that.
Then we come to a person commits burglary in the first degree if he violates what is our second degree burglary section, and if the building is a dwelling and the entering or remaining occurs at night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this makes burglary of a dwelling first degree burglary only if it occurs in the nighttime. Everybody understand that?
Yes. And I don't know if I go on. Because the guy could enter with all these bad things, explosives and everything else, and hurt somebody if it was 45 minutes before sunset.
No, no. These are alternative.
Oh, these are alternative. That's right. That's right. Or, yeah. Well, I go for it.
You.
There's only one thought I have on this, and I still think by God. I know what you're trying to do as far as taking the minimum number of degrees, but what kind of penalty are you going to put on second degree or first degree burglary?
What?
You're going to
40 years?
You're going to make it 40 years?
That's what it is now.
No, 15 now.
Yeah, burglary in a dwelling is 15.
Yeah.
Unless it, but if you attempt to use explosives,
then it's 40.
Oh, yeah, explosives.
No. And this has had its effect, regardless of what people say about punishment not having any good. In Canada, they have used explosives all the time because they don't have such a law up there.
Oh, yeah, I don't question the value of that explosive provision. Yeah, that's why I retained it in this grant. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you retain it within the burglary and first degree draft and you have it here, you're going to have to make burglary in the first degree a little stronger than it is in any other state.
Oh, I see what you mean.
The penalty.
In other words, you don't think it's too likely we're going to have burglary in the first degree being punishable by 40 years of penitentiary.
Not these other aspects of it, no. I think that...
I think we have to be realistic about our sentencing. Prosecutor, the only case in recent history, I think, of a burglary by explosive charge, and the guy got 9 years.
Yeah.
He had a 40-year maximum. It was about his third or fourth fall.
Jeez.
He wasn't going to get 4 years. It had been his tenth fall.
Of course, that's known, too. I agree. I agree that that's known among burglars. However, they know about the 40-year.
I think one of the reasons that we don't have as many nitro burglaries anymore is there just aren't that many people that are expert enough in it. But the question that I have, and I'm prepared to go ahead and vote because I'm probably in the minority and we should hustle along. But I have grave reservations about reducing burglary in a dwelling to second degree burglary if it occurs in the daytime. I think it's a distinct and I think that it's a serious crime, whether it occurs in the daytime or the nighttime. And I think that breaking into your house, whether it's in the daytime or nighttime, connotes much more serious offense than if it breaks into your office in the daytime or the nighttime. Because you might break in there and steal something that's got no commercial value, but it has great sentimental value. Now, I know if you both all agree that this is okay the way it is, go ahead and get it out of the way, and we'll bring it up later.
How big a drafting job are we talking about? To change the wording, we're talking about a heck of a big job.
Are we? Don, how would you change it?
In other words, if
we could go into another degree.
If the
you almost need to do it.
Well, another degree for what? Aren't you suggesting it would be better if we make work for the first degree any entry of
the building is a dwelling.
At any time.
Yeah, I'm suggesting that if you just the building is a dwelling, period.
And you enter it with the intent to commit a crime.
Right.
Well, I think the public generally had a connotation of the fear of going to bed at night and sleeping and having somebody enter your house is a lot worse. Frightful thing in the daytime when you're off at work. It's true, there are lots more burglaries in the daytime because it's easier done in the daytime. But I don't think it's as bad on the public, the victims.
I think it creates this great an apprehension in the minds of the public, though, that it may, that'll occur again if it occurs in the daytime as it
does. Well, somebody burglarized our house when we were away. Got back and found the window of Jim Eaton, the inside door of Jim Eaton's, and I think it's gone, but I didn't think a hell of a lot of it. But if I'd have been asleep and woke up in the morning and found that somebody had been going through that house when my family and I were asleep and didn't know it, I'd have been real scared and real concerned about it and thought that a much worse injury had been done to my household.
Well, this obviously was your thinking.
Yeah,
that's why
that's my thinking. And as I mentioned earlier, the model penal code grades it separately. If it's a dwelling house at night, it's burglary in the felony in the second degree. Otherwise, it's a felony in the third degree. And then, of course, their commentary, too. They say that darkness increases the alarm of the victims, facilitates commission of the offense, hampers identification of the suspect. Well, it seemed to me that there's a good reason. If it happens in a person's dwelling house at night, there are good policy reasons for making it more serious.
Now, but as to burglary not in the dwelling, it has the same degree if it's day or night, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It has the same degree day or night unless he's either armed with explosives or deadly weapons. In other words, under our burglary in the first degree, if he breaks into either a house or a non-dwelling in the daytime, if he's armed or he hurts somebody under our draft, that would be burglary in the first degree. But if he just breaks into a dwelling in the daytime, it would be burglary in the second degree. If he breaks into a non-dwelling in the daytime, it would be burglary in the second degree. But if the building's a dwelling at night, then it's more serious. Well,
you want to go ahead and make the motion for the adoption of sub 2? You can, and I'll vote against it and get it out of the way.
Sub 2 to be adopted.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, and I oppose. Yeah, that takes care of burglary, right?
Well, I've got one other little section here, and that's possession of burglar's tools, which is part of that, put in with burglary.
And I ask you in connection with that, if you used that great constitutional guide, the city ordinance, the city department, if you made reference to their burglar tools.
No, I didn't. All right, it's on page 15.
Burglar's tools.
person commits a crime with possession of burglar's tools, if he possesses any burglar tool with the intent to use the tool, or knowing that some person intends to use the tool to commit or facilitate a forcible entry into premises, or theft by a physical taking. 2. A burglar tool means explosive, tool, instrument, or other article adapted, designed, or commonly used for committing or facilitating a forcible entry into premises or theft by a physical taking. The summary, while not amounting to a crime against property in the strict sense, this section logically belongs to the burglary article. The offense as prescribed by this section consists of two elements. 1. Possession of a burglar tool, and 2. The intent to use the tool or knowledge that some person intends to use it to commit or facilitate a forcible entry into premises or theft by a physical taking. The name of the crime is not intended to limit the scope of the prohibition to tools used only to commit burglary. An instrument, a quote, adapted, designed, or commonly used to commit or facilitate any theft of property by a physical taking would fall within its coverage. Now, an example of that would be a tool that's used to break into automobiles, for example, or stealing, committing theft from parking meters this time. Many different tools and articles would be included within the definition of burglar tool. Items such as wire cutters, crowbars, picklocks, dynamites, or other explosives which could be used for a legitimate purpose. However, mere possession alone would not be criminal, and the state would be required to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that possession of a burglar tool by the defendant was accompanied by the requisite unlawful intent or knowledge. D. The section is an adaptation of Michigan Revised Criminal Code Section 2615, and which was derived from New York Revised Penal Law, Section 14035. Both of these states had comparable provisions in their respective criminal codes prior to the revisions, and the new sections are designed to modernize and strengthen previous statutes. Model Penal Code Section 5.06 penalizes the possession of, quote, any instrument of crime with purpose to employ a criminal. A relationship to existing law. Present Oregon law contains no comparable provision. However, the concept of proscribing the possession of instruments of crime is firmly established in our criminal code and statutes such as the following. Carrying a dangerous weapon with intent to use it, carrying a concealed weapon, unlawful possession of weapons, possession of slugging or stabbing weapons. Of course, this is the kind of section that it's new for Oregon, but it's fairly old, well established in many other states, particularly your more metropolitan states where you have large concentrations of persons and property, such as in New York and Michigan, some of the other eastern states. But,
question. I cut you off.
That's no, I'm finished.
Michigan and New York had it before. Are there any reported cases on the constitutionality of language? I'm wondering if it's not excessively broad, and if so, susceptible to attack on the constitutional grounds. And then also in that same frame of reference, I'm almost sure that the Oregon court has ruled upon the constitutionality of the Portland City Ordinance.
I don't know what the language of this is or not. I mean, I would think you'd certainly have a constitutional problem if mere possession alone were criminal. But where you've got possession coupled with an intent, either intent to use it to commit a crime or knowledge that somebody else is going to use it.
But I can prove that. I can prove that.
Well, I don't know.
You have to get them in the back room.
You get them at the scene.
And you wring their arm until they confess. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Now, if, under the right circumstances, they will confess sometimes.
Now, do you think are you saying that it's too broad because it's a definition of burglar tools? Is that your reason?
Yeah, well, I was wondering if it's a burglar tool. I'm going down the road in my pickup, and I've got a crowbar, I got a wrecking bar, and some
wire cutters.
Wire cutters.
And they do look suspicious.
Yeah. And these are adapted for the use of permitting or facilitating a forcible entry.
Yeah, what are you going to do, build a fence or whatever?
But I see you qualify it by coupling it with the intent. I'm trying to put into a situation where, absent the confession.
Well, a lot of times you'll get an act that he's probably smart. He's got it, I wasn't going to use it. My buddy was going to use it, but I wasn't going to.
He's a big fat confession, in that effect.
Or he goes up to the door and somebody comes by, and so he drops the tools and runs. They arrest him, and he hasn't started to make the entry yet, but there's sufficient evidence to show that they were intending to use it.
Yeah. Our man's arrested, and in his car there's some lately stolen property found, along with some crowbars and the wire cutters and a few other odds and ends. I certainly think you have pretty good evidence to on the question of intent there.
Yeah, I think there might be a lot of places where the officers would have almost a case on the guy for burglary, but not quite. And this might help them to get some kind of conviction.
Knowing that some person intends to use the tool to commit or facilitate a forceful entry, well, that's prospective. But if you arrest him and he has the tools and the lately stolen property in his car, we're not talking about a prospective act, we're talking about a past act.
No, but if you're talking about also the intent, his own intent to use the tool.
Or the intent of his buddy.
In the future?
Mm-hmm. The intent to use would be future.
They lay careful plans for these things, and becomes generally known in the medium criminal underworld there.
So
he's caught red-handed with the tools, and he says, "Oh, no, I didn't plan to use those at all." Joe over here is going to use
it. Yeah, ours is catching around.
First, you're telling me you don't have an attorney, of course.
But what I'm talking about is if you catch him with the goods after the act's been committed by the use of your prospective language, you can't prove it. You can't use it.
Well, no, if you can show that he's committed one burglary with the, and burglars were committed with the use of certain tools, I think you could reasonably argue that he
intended to use it again.
Now, as New York says in their comment, the third element of this offense, the mens rea, is the most important and the more difficult to prove. It must be shown beyond a reasonable doubt that possession of the instrument was under circumstances evincing an intent to use in the commission of an offense, or under circumstances evincing knowledge that some other person intends to use it in the commission of such an offense. A general intent to use is sufficient. That is, the prosecution need not show the particular time and place where the defendant or other person intended to use the instruments in issue. The defendant's or other person's intentions need not be to use them for the prescribed purpose in the county where the possession occurred. Indeed, the intention could very well be to use the instruments outside New York. In such a case, the conduct contemplated by the defendant or other person in the foreign jurisdiction must not only be of the character described in 14035, they say committing offenses involving forcible entry into premises, or offenses involving larceny by physical taking, or offenses involving theft of services defined in subdivisions 4, 5, or 6, under circumstances evincing an intent to use or knowledge, etc. Rarely, if ever, would the contemplated conduct not be criminal in the foreign jurisdiction when it is of the character described under their section 140.35. Screwdrivers, a claw hammer, rubber gloves, etc., are not by themselves burglar's tools, and no presumption of mens rea can ever arise from your possession.